The song I chose today is Breathing the Breath by Matt Redman. I first heard it 13 years ago. The band is going to play it later, so I'll read through the lyrics here in a bit. So I bought this song on a compact disc when it came out 13 years ago. Compact discs, for those of you that don't know, they're small. They're like thin plastic discs with data imprinted on the, and you slide it into this CD player. It's kind of like a small record, actually. Think of a record. It's like a small record for context. Anyway, so this song, Breathing the Breath by Matt Redman, I remember hearing it. I have a memory from 13 years ago. So I'm going to read through the first two verses. It's a little repetitive. It's kind of a simple song, but I love the layers. It has a good message, lots of layers. So the first verse goes like this. We have nothing to give that didn't first come from your hand. We have nothing to offer you which you did not provide. Every good, perfect gift comes from your kind and gracious heart, and all we do is give back to you what always has been yours. I love that. The second verse, similar theme. Who has given to you that it should be paid back to him? Who has given to you as if you needed anything? From you and to you and through you come all things, O Lord, and all we do is give back to you what always has been yours. That's actually in one of the doxologies that we use. So I love what part of the message of this song, that just the reality that we are not self-sufficient, that we are not our own out independent, as much as we as Americans like to be independent, that we are the created. He is the creator. We are not the giver of life. We are the created. We are the mortals. He is the generous, the loving one, and we are the recipients of that grace and that love. And I just love it. It just makes me more, when I stop and really think about that reality, it makes me more grateful. It makes me more humble and realizing that that's refreshing. I guess that gives me a sense of relief to know I'm not God, that He is. He's God, you know, our proper place. But the where it struck me 13 years ago was in the chorus. And it says, we're breathing the breath that you gave us to breathe to worship you. And we're singing the song with the very same breath to worship you. We're breathing the breath that you gave us to breathe to worship you. So I had a summer job in college 13 years ago, and that's where I remember listening to this CD on the way to work. And this season of my life, a lot of maybe people in college, the main focus of faith was doing things for God. That my perception of God was that He was most pleased when I was accomplishing things for Him, when I was doing more praying, more reading, more talking about Him, thinking about Him, acting more like Him, just a lot of focus on more. And that I thought, you know, that there, I did think God was grateful, and He liked when I, you know, when I did those things for Him. But I always felt like as soon as I reached a certain level of I've memorized this many scriptures, well, then here's a few more to do. You know, that the line kept moving, that it was kind of like, okay, that's good, now come further, you know, and there was this constant pressure to produce more, to do more. So I remember hearing this song and crying, just feeling the sense of freedom that simply breathing was an act of worship. It's an effortless way to please God, that He gave us the breath and He to breathe, and that's a form of worship. And I found that so freeing, and especially in that season of my life when I was so focused on doing things for God, I just felt like this song just reached out and grabbed my heart and said, sometimes breathing is enough. And now it's like, I look back and I'm like, that's such a simple approach to faith. It's so easy and it's so attractive now. Like, how did I not get that? And I think in part, it's because I'm an American, as this meme illustrates. I saw a guy today at Starbucks. He had no smartphone, tablet, or laptop. He just sat there drinking his coffee like a psychopath. I saw this and I'm like, I have to get this. That there's something to the simple things of life that we, our culture doesn't allow us to slow down and appreciate. But I think that God made life for us to appreciate some of the simple things. The warmth of a cup of coffee, I think we're supposed to at times just embrace that. Playing a game, being silly with your kids, the laughter of a friend or the beauty of a sunset, some of the simple things, and just in the, living that in the moment and embracing that. Christina and I, we were able to get away for our 10th anniversary, and we went to Mexico, and we were able to sit on the beach for 7 nights, I think, and watch the sunset. And we got it down to like a science where we would, you know, like there were like 3 rows of chairs and people would leave and we'd like set a timer for like 30 minutes and be like, okay, if they aren't coming back, then we're moving up a row. Anyway, we wanted like a front row seat just watching. It was on the Pacific side. So we were able to watch the sunset over the water. And it was just awesome. And really, it was hard to slow down and to just do nothing, to not be connected to our phones or computers, to not be thinking about what should we be accomplishing. I was like, there were times where I'm just like sitting there, I'm like, what should I be doing? Like, I don't know what to do. Like, this is weird. So the last day we were there, we knew exactly when sunset was. So we're like, let's just savor this last sunset. And so we had the front row seats and we're just sitting there in the little beach chairs and we're just like taking it in for like an hour and a half. We hardly said anything. We weren't reading magazines or books we weren't talking to people. It was just so awesome. I think it was just like, and I had this thought in that time, like, this is enough. God is delighted in me and delighting in his creation. I don't think he's saying like, okay, get back to doing what you need. You know, like this is just saving up energy so you can produce more. You know, I think that they're like, he designed it for us to rest and to enjoy some of the simple things. So I wonder, is God the one that pressure that I felt in college, is he the one that was pressuring me to perform, behave, do? Or was that my perception of him? Did I project that on him? Maybe our filter of God is clouded by our Western, commercialized, industrialized, driven culture. I think about one of my first jobs. I worked at Bob Evans restaurant as a server. And I am not built for food, for the food industry, the fast pace, if you didn't know that already. So this story is related to my speed. So my manager, Robin, I'd be like trying to close out at the end of my shift, trying to do all my side work. And I was like, I remember like, she would always be like, you need to go faster. You need to clock out. You need to go faster. Finish your stuff. You know, I need you off the clock. And I remember breaking down at some point saying, seriously, Robin, you know that I'm trying my hardest. This is as fast as I go. I cannot go any faster. And she said, I know, but I still need you off the clock. So I actually clocked out and then I finished my work, because she wanted to save that $3.09 an hour. You know, she's getting pressure to perform at a certain level of the bottom dollar, and so she's putting that pressure on me and all of her employees, and it's just this cascading pressure to perform. And I think sometimes we mess it up. I think sometimes we make it too complicated. So does God delight in us delighting in the simple things? I think so. I think he designed life that way. I mean, he basically, maybe that's why he enacted Sabbath. He's like, people, now I'm making a commandment. You have to take a rest. I think my perception of God as the taskmaster, I'm grateful that I've set that aside. I don't see him like that anymore. But the reality is that we can't just sit around and drink coffee all day. There is a time for everything. I'm sorry, Dave. That there is a time for everything. There is a time for work. There's a time for rest. There's a time for play. And so I think that though he designed certain simple things for us to embrace, I think there are also specific things that he calls us to, that he invites us into, and that there are unique ways that we are wired that give us life to put our hand to, that there are ways that we participate in the creation with the Creator, and that we, through our gifts, through the ways our resources, through our experiences, our desires, that we give back. And that we do something for God, that we offer a gift to the world. And I think there's beauty in that as well, that we're called to. So there, I think there are invitations that God offers us that it goes beyond just like, okay, you can breathe. Your whole, you know, like breathing is one of those simple things. So it's like, we've got that. Here's some other. I think there are some inward and some outward invitations that he extends to us. And if we see them in a correct light, I would think they should feel more like opportunities than obligations. That maybe if we're leaning into the things he has called us to do, and not that we're just putting on ourselves or other people are putting on us, if it's like we're leaning into those specific things that we are uniquely wired for, I would hope those would feel like a new opportunity, a new freedom. And I think there have been times where I've found things like this gives me life. I was made for this. I think there's a lot of beauty in that. And I think this song, it kind of has some of that flavor that it's an honor to give back to him. That he's not demanding. It feels less like a demand, more like an honor, like recognizing you've given this and I want to give it back. So something that has been helpful for me to maybe make some of those shifts in how I view God, allowing me to be more gracious with myself, is to recognize that faith is a journey. I read a book called The Critical Journey last year that talks about the stages of faith, and seriously, it was my favorite book of the entire year. The authors looked at different faith models. They interviewed a ton of different people. They took psychology and human development, but also mixed it with some spiritual development of people that have noticed some trends. And I think a lot of us will find ourselves along this path. So I'm actually going to talk through each one. I think you'll just to kind of explain it more. But it's not like, I don't think it's a perfect match for everyone's journey, but I think you'll see the broad strokes that a lot of us have gone through. So stage one, the recognition of God, that there's this initial experience of God, maybe as a child, or maybe later in adulthood, where God becomes real for the first time. And that there's something bigger that you sense, that it isn't just about that, regular life, that there's something more. That God is out there, he's real, and you have this exciting sense of God's purpose, and that he knows you, that he cares. So that's the recognition of God. So there's a lot of zealousness in this stage. There's a lot of excitement, like, okay, I found this new thing. You need to know about this thing. And so I think it propels a lot of early, childlike, it's a childlike approach to God. So then stage two, the life of discipleship, and that's where you start to sense a sense of belonging from a community of faith. and that there's someone that you look to learn from, that there's a set of teaching that you become like a student of. That's what a disciple is. So you become a student of something. So maybe it's a mentor or a certain church or a certain doctrinal statement or a certain denomination that you feel like, hey, I'm a part of this. I'm a part of this family. And so there's a strong tie toward community in stage two. And you were driven to be part of a body of faith. And then stage three, you start to feel some ownership. You know, I'm part of this thing, and you see the gifts that God has given you. And so then you kind of switch and you're just like, you know what? I need to get off of my butt and do something about it. You know, like, I'm part of this family. I need to participate. I needed to do something. And so the stage three, one of the strongest flavors is that production, is that accomplishing things for God. And I think that I had a lot of that flavor when I first heard the song. So a lot of focus on doing. And there's good legitimate value in that. You know, that and I think sometimes churches are extra attracted to preach messages that go in this vein because they need help. They need volunteers to have the ministries go. And they know that by having people participate and take ownership of their faith, that there is a progression that helps people grow in some ways. But unfortunately, the idea, the book says that you don't want to be stuck at any particular stage, ideally, because then you can overemphasize the goodness of that stage. Stage four, the journey inward, there's a lot of a shift again toward God. I forgot to mention this, actually. So the lines, they kind of cross over. They have some relation. So 1 and 4, 2 and 5, 3 and 6. You'll see that in a second. So there's a rediscovery of God in the journey inward. And where you move from stage three and you, some of the cookie cutter approaches don't work for you anymore because God is inviting you on an inward journey, a more customized journey with Him. And so there's a rediscovery, relating to God in a deeper way and relating to yourself in a deeper way. This is where I think our formation communities are perfectly designed to help equip people in this stage because it's setting people up for success with practices and of soul care and self-awareness. So that's the emphasis of stage four, whereas stage three is doing. Stage four is more about being. But in that removing from stage three to stage four, you're tearing away. You experience some loss because some of those easy paradigms, those easy constructs of church or of God or the Bible crumble a little bit. And it's no longer, God is saying the faith that is out there in a generic way, now I need it to be yours. And so it's difficult. And so it's no longer the faith of stage two where people told you what your faith was going to be and it was all the same across a community. Now you're like, I don't know if I fit there anymore. And you move to a different place because you're on your own inward journey. And so it's very hard. And so that's where the wall comes in because most people hit this wall of disillusionment or loss, and it's scary. And you want the familiar, and you might even go back. They say the stages are fluid and cumulative. So it's not like you're all at one, and then you're at two, and then you're at three. You might have a lot of one. I mean, honestly, some charismatic churches, they hang around at one a lot. That zealousness, the awe of God, the excitement about, you know, just, it's very emotive. Stage two, I think a lot of more maybe Baptist churches, you know, family churches where it's about knowing and it's about the family and your community. Stage three, more social justice churches or Mennonite, you know, like the activists, you know. And so it's kind of interesting how different churches have like a specialty. Anyway, so, but they're fluid, and so you might have different flavors at different times. You might go to start at 1, you go to 2, and then you go back to 1. And then you go back to 2, 3. 3, 2, 4, 1. There's only 6 stages, by the way. So then stage 5, you move outward, the journey outward. And that is a reconnection to community, but you're connected to community in a different way. Whereas before, you were a conformist. I'm saying you a lot. It's just an example. The English language, you know. So in stage 2, you were conforming. You wanted to fit the mold. Whereas in stage 5, you've kind of grounded yourself in a rediscovery of God. Like, God has worked on some of those dark, like, places in your heart, and you recognize your brokenness because he's shown a light on some of the, you know, the shadow side. And so you're able to offer yourself to a community in a way that's more humble, in a way that's more selfless, and you're able to use your gifts in a way that's focusing more on other people. Whereas stage 3, the productive life, and Vicky, if I'm saying anything out of, some 5 is hard for me to describe. How would you say?
Three, except that stages 2 and 3 is about a tribe, and stage 5 is your tribe is now everybody. And so I think that's the main distinction, is that you're part of a community, but it's everybody's your tribe now, and it's not, like you said, it's selfless. It's God has done so much work on you on the inside that you can move beyond just a small tribe, and you can now see the larger picture.
I like that. Thank you. Look at that. I knew I was missing it, and you knew I was too. Thank you. So the tribe. No, seriously, Vicky is a resource. She's a wise lady. So the tribe, you're focused on the tribe. You only have one experience of faith. You only have, and then that crumbles, and you realize, wait, there's more diversity out there. There's more beauty. It's more nuanced, and then you have a greater appreciation. Okay. So then, stage 6, the life of love. So this is actually the part of what I love. So whereas in stage 3, you're the productive life, but some of the primary motivations for doing things for God are more out of guilt or shame or duty. You know, it's that you feel like, oh, I need to, it's almost like that school feeling of like, oh, I need to get an A. You know, I need to do this for appreciation, for acknowledgement, affirmation. Whereas stage 6, the life of love, that there's this beautiful life-giving cycle, and that God designed it for us to be filled up and feel His love, to feel like I am the beloved, to experience His love personally, and then be able to just exude that, to spread it out to others. That we love as He loved us. But I mean, we can love because He first loved us. Honestly, that I don't think we are able to love fully until we experience His love. That He is that fuel for love. And that's part of, I think, God's design, that it should feel like this life-giving cycle of receiving His love and also reflecting it. And I think I see that in the song, which, and we'll hear it in again, but there's this receiving and then reflecting, and it's this cycle where, you know. So this song is based in part off Romans 11, verses 33. If you want to turn there, I'm going to read it. It's 4 verses, so I won't camp there very long. But I just wanted to read it because I think it helps fill out the heart behind the song. So it's on 920, page 920. So this is what it says. Oh, the depth of the riches of the wisdom and knowledge of God. How unsearchable His judgments and His paths beyond tracing out. Who has known the mind of the Lord, or who has been His counselor? Who has ever given to God that God should repay them? For from Him and through Him and for Him are all things. To him be the glory forever. Amen. So it's part of that song of like, he is God. He is great. He is the generous, the one. He's the source of life. Then it moves into a very familiar verse, Romans 12:1, right after that. Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. And I love that tie, that it's saying, here's who God is. He is the one who needs nothing. He is the source of everything. He is the one who is God. And we are the recipients of that love, of that mercy. So in view of his mercy, let us offer back what he's given us. So I think it causes me, and I hope that I'm growing in my gratitude, that I recognize my place as that grateful recipient. And that, and I think that's what that stage six is designed for, in that you've gone through the muck, and you've pushed through the wall, and you've had a rediscovery of God, and you see the darkness inside of you in that inward journey. And then you see, in spite of this darkness and this brokenness, God still loves me. And then that makes him all the more lovely. And then you feel his love, and then that love fills you up to be able to spread to the rest. And so you recognize that we are recipients. We are not self-sufficient. And then you're like, well, it is totally an honor. All I have is from you. All I have is yours. And it's an honor to be able to share that with the people around me. Thank you for your provision, for your mercy and grace, the love you've shown me. So I want to show that to other people. So I don't know where you would find yourself in the journey of faith. I'm not sure if you would, where you feel that, or if, going back to the simple and specific things, I'm not sure how well you think you embrace the simple things and you slow down, or that you have discovered God's invitation into specific ways for you to offer yourself. But as, at least from my vantage point, I feel like so many of you are living out of that groundedness in Jesus, that you, I see you doing things, making choices that are selfless and that are, I think, you're uniquely wired to do. People at CAT using their intellect to solve complex problems. That's God-given gift. That's unique. People here are uniquely gifted for that. Parents who are using baby wipes to solve complex messes. Parents who are trying to show their kids the way of Jesus and trying to mold them into kind and compassionate, generous kids, and helping them see that image of God inside of them. People who, therapists, caseworkers who are reaching into some of the darkest parts of society and emotional trauma and helping walk people through that. Teachers who are putting in extra times, talking with kids after school, doing extra work, praying for their kids, knowing them by name, saying, you're important, you have a purpose, and helping them to know their future. I see people who are getting involved on the political level, people who are involved in organizations that are trying to enact systemic change to do good in our world, to right some of those wrongs, to spread God's love and his justice. People standing up for the marginalized of society. And people, so there's like, I see people getting involved in the broad level, and I also see people caring for individuals. I think of Holly Hamill. I see you there caring for the elderly, caring for people who standing by the individual person, and coming alongside of people and saying, your story matters. you matter. And that changes people one life at a time. So thank you for leaning into those specific ways of following Jesus in using the gifts and the resources and the experiences he's given to you for other people. So, at least from my vantage point, if I were God, I would be pleased with all of you. Seriously. You especially, Lynn. Really, I mean, that was the message where this song struck me, that I felt like he is pleased with me. I think I need to do all this effort. But you know what? He notices. He knows me. And even in those simple things of breathing, we're doing what we were made to do. And so I want to just take a few minutes just to slow down and to rest in that, that there is literally no purpose for the next few minutes except to breathe. Just breathe. And then we'll listen to the song.
We have nothing to give that didn't first come from your hands. We have nothing to offer you that you did not provide. Every good, perfect gift comes from your kind and gracious heart. And all we do is give back to you what always has been yours. And we're breathing the breath that you gave us to breathe, to worship you, to worship you. And we're singing these songs and the very same breath to worship you, to worship you. Who was given to you that it should be paid back to him? Who was given to you as if you needed anything? From you and to you and through you come all things, oh Lord. And all we do is give back to you what always has been yours. And we're breathing the breath that you gave us to breathe, to worship you, to worship you. Worship you. And we're breathing the breath that you gave us to breathe, to worship you, to worship you. to worship you, to worship you. Oh, I'm breathing the breath that you gave us to breathe, to worship you, to worship you.